I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Michael Sidgwick, joined by fellow Dudley Boy Michael Humphler to discuss everything that happened on Friday's show. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts where we review AEW Rampage, AEW Dynamite, WWE Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have wrestler interviews, roundtable discussions, and we host a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. But Hamlet, Monday morning, Friday is long in the air rear view. What were your general thoughts on Rampage?
Well, they were very, very general thoughts, because I got to be honest, it was a bit of a raced watch today. I didn't have the time I would have quite liked this weekend to watch it with certain very progressive wrestling shows taking up much of my time. On the surface level, and I'm looking forward to getting into the more granular side of things, polished, neat, tidy, good 1 hour. Justification of why 1 hour wrestling shows are probably the best of all of us, but still very little that leaves me chomping at the bit thinking, well, I've got to tune in next week's Rampage. There is nothing I don't think at this point they can do to shake the B show tag, even when an episode is objectively pretty decent.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with that. The days of them doing Bryan Danielson versus Eddie Kingston, and oh my God, it's a classic. It's, if this was on a pay-per-view, people would be talking about it for years and years and years. That sort of stratospheric standard just isn't being hit anymore. 9 times out of 10, we are left with a really enjoyable, digestible 7.5 out of week that when it's done, you're like, oh, I really enjoyed that. That was a nice way to spend my Friday evening or Saturday morning, depending on which side of the pond you reside. There's more than two countries, but you know exactly what I mean. So yeah, I was really happy with the main event in particular. Nice to see a guy who, realistically, I can't deal with clap crowds all that often.
Yeah.
My New Japan watching has tailed off, so it's nice to be reminded that, you know what, Jay White absolutely rules, and we'll get into that. But before we get into the main event, of course, let's go chronologically with the opener. It was Adam Cole versus 10 of the Dark Order. The story of the match, essentially, is that 10 is a huge guy who is capable of tossing Adam Cole around at will, but he's got an injured body part, which Adam Cole targets relentlessly. He takes away the wrapping from the knee, and he cuts it down to size throughout before snapping off a German suplex. Adam Cole rebounds from that, starts picking away at that injury, and throughout the match, he just gradually cuts him down to size. 10 does have one awesome fire-up spot where he just throws a lariat right in Adam Cole's neck, and he bumps onto the other side of his neck. It looked absolutely great, but 10 is limited, powerful, but limited. Adam Cole is a sly, strategic technician, great counter-wrestler that comes into the fore. And the story of the match, basically, is that Adam Cole is facing a guy who is more powerful than him with a move that requires his knees and little thighs to spring into, that being the buckshot lariat ahead of the match with Hangman Page at Revolution. So I interpreted this match as no one really wants to see Adam Cole versus 10, realistically, but people want a sort of inkling of the story we're going to get at Revolution. And I was overjoyed to realize they are not going to do 40 minutes of NXT parody with shocked kick-out faces and multiple near falls. We are going to get Adam Cole brilliantly deconstructing the legs of Hangman Page to prevent him from hitting the buckshot lariat. And I thought this match was a reasonable enough attempt to be able to tell that story, and that hence why 10 was selected as the opponent. I've been a little bit low on 10. I feel like in this promotion especially, the fact that he's as green and as limited as he is gets completely exposed, because it's just wall-to-wall brilliance across a diverse array of styles. But I thought you did a commendable job here. That fire-up spot that I talked about was tremendous. But the story was basically Adam Cole has got it in him to completely kneecap Hangman Page and prevent him from hitting the buckshot. What are your thoughts on the match?
I think it's a pairing. I like more about it after the fact than I did beforehand. So the match you can like classify as a success. 10, and I've thought this before, but I guess because he's not often profiled, he's just not in your purview, I suppose. But 10 is an interesting member of the AEW roster in the sense that, in much the same way Bryan Danielson came in and size didn't matter, or the fact that he didn't eat meat didn't matter, the fact that he was a great wrestler, a fantastic fighter, a purveyor of violence, all that sort of stuff, made him what he was in this environment. 10 is big, but being big isn't enough in a competitive wrestling organization, despite what we've been trained by the market leader for all of this time. So 10's size is only going to get him so far against such a skilled practitioner like Adam Cole, much in the same way that John Moxley is smaller than 10, but John Moxley is also a bit harder and street, like sort of more streetwise than 10, and thus was able to, it was 10 he bloodied up under the mask, isn't it? You know, despite having the size of him. If that happens on a Raw, like Moxley and Adam Cole are getting beaten in 3 or 4 minutes despite a gutsy effort. They're getting beat with a tree slam or something like that. And I think that's a useful tool for AEW, is to have a guy who's big as him. And yes, he's green, but he's got more than just the odd power spot to his game. But it's really helpful in getting a guy like Adam Cole ready for a title match, because it's, well, he's got everything. What can't he do? Like, if he can chop down this tree, then he can definitely beat Hangman Page. And equally, it sort of tacitly puts over the likes of your Wardlows and your Powerhouse Hobbs. And, you know, we're going to talk a bit more about the state of that ladder match already. But as big guys need more in their arsenal than just to be big here in AEW, because the standard is simply too high. Being 6 foot and jacked, or like 6 foot tall and 6 foot wide. Well, yes, I've heard. Like, so Zack Sabre Jr. It's wild. Yeah. But like, being 6 foot tall and 6 foot wide or being jacked is simply not enough. And I think they were sort of on a macro level, I think I enjoyed this more and saw the benefit of 10 after that really shonky security beatdown thing on Wednesday. And again, like, I know we always get teased in attacking the bad faith arguments when we do these AEW reviews, but Adam Cole opens Rampage all the time. What does that tell you about the trust they have in Adam Cole to reheat a crowd that are knackered from Dynamite? Like, this is a star in the place he needs to be, and not somebody doing bits with his mates, as seems to be this odd narrative now.
Imagine like being happy at work.
I know.
Like, it's just absolutely incredible, but you know, it's all completely in bad faith. Before we move on, I will put over 10 selling. I think the visual of the knee brace helped enormously, because we've seen guys wear knee braces before. And it's
massive brace, because he's a massive man.
Yeah, it's like kind of synonymous with, oh, that guy's got absolutely broken knees. But I think 10 did a commendable job of actually selling this sort of deconstruction of the limb. This is all a solid bit of business. If you haven't watched Rampage yet, maybe skip it, unless you're a huge 10 guy. But the basic gist is Adam Cole is not going to do an NXT match at Revolution, and I'm overjoyed by that. I think this is Tony Khan's way of saying, look, Adam Cole's different here, and he's probably going to be a little bit better. Yeah. Even though, like, Adam Cole was great in NXT, but I didn't need a sinister structure at the end of the day. We got a brief look at the MJF CM Punk story so far, as we are doing the big sell ahead of Revolution, on the subject of which there was a qualifying match to determine who's the next entrant in the face of the Revolution ladder match between Powerhouse Hobbs versus Dante Martin. Exactly the kind of story you would expect. Dante Martin just flying with these convoluted sort of rotations brilliantly into the face of Powerhouse Hobbs, who, in response, being absolutely awesome as a horse, beels him across the ring. I think beeling and yeeting is going to be a huge factor in this ladder match. I think Darby Allin, particularly, is just going to get thrown around that ring with the idea that he's going to have a breakthrough performance. Even if he doesn't win, everyone's going to remember it, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Again, that incredible dive, it was a tornado, I believe, temporarily subdued Powerhouse Hobbs. They worked certain sequences around the strength versus aerial dynamic that these two have. I thought this was a lot tighter than their previous two matches, which I thought was sort of undermined by certain moments of hesitation. They're both not exactly the most experienced of guys. This is a lot tighter. It was a story that they can tell very well indeed. I couldn't tell whether the spinebuster finish was anticlimactic, because I haven't been trained to really take it seriously as a finish, but it just looked so gruesome that when it finished, I was like, okay, no one's kicking out of that. And I really like a nice rudimentary use of a wrestling move, that if you can put it over, something that is used as a signature can in fact be reimagined as a finisher if the guy executing it does such a tremendous job. Powerhouse Hobbs did precisely that. I was a little bit mixed on the finish because I thought Powerhouse Hobbs was great in this match. I do like the idea of them putting three absolutely huge monsters in the field, a different dynamic to a ladder match, which is basically a multi-man ladder match is an excuse to do spots.
Yeah.
But when you've got Dante Martin doing those spots, give me that excuse. Mm. So it's a little bit odd that he wasn't included. I understand that it's wrapped up in the ongoing Team Taz versus Dante Martin storyline, so I understand why he was putting
it ongoing
match.
Or is it just going on?
It's just like going, yeah, yeah. I know. There is that element as well. I personally would not have put Dante Martin in this spot if you were going to cruelly tease the idea of him doing absolutely spectacular jaw-dropping stuff in a ladder match environment, but it's all redundant. He's not in it. What are your thoughts on the winner and the match?
In terms of the match, I would agree with you that I think it's the best I've seen from these two. It was, like you're kind of watching this, like the presentation of this in terms of the Team Taz, Dante Martin thing, and being like, why are you lying? Why are you trying to tell me that there's still somehow heat in this? It's a nice booking of these two old rivals from this long-standing thing, but nobody cares about this anymore. That like the feud kind of ran out of juice without ever really having a proper payoff. If anything, this served as that. I love the finish. I love the spinebuster win. AEW does this all the time. People win matches, and it almost feels like it's the air coming out of the balloon, but it happens that one time for it to work 10 more times, either with the finishes or with near falls.
Yep.
As we talked about, secondary moves being like perfectly viable finishes. A lot of wrestlers have a pinfall finish and a submission finish for such occasions, and the tap outs don't always resonate first time, but then it only takes one, and after the fact, you've got it and you can use it. So I really like that finish. I like to see it. I like the idea. Again, it's bigger picture stuff, macro more than micro. You need to be reminded that a match can just end through a move being good enough. And this is useful for that. In terms of Martin not being in the match, I keep sniffing around the Darius Martin injury news updates,
yeah.
And I can't find them. And wrestling brain leads me to believe that that means he's getting good to go. And on the Dynamite review last week, I made mention that I wonder if this triple threat is an intentional red herring, and it's maybe not going to be Young Bucks and Red Dragon as simplistically as we believe. What about Top Flight in there instead? As the real gutsy underdogs, put Young Bucks or Red Dragon in. Is it the casino in the second week?
Yes.
Like Top Flight as the casino battle royal, like the surprise, the jokers of the casino battle royale would be quite a nice way to insert them into the match when everybody at this point will be expecting, well, it's probably going to be Red Dragon that qualify first, isn't it? So everybody's going to be expecting the Young Bucks to get the spot. And I just think I think it'd be quite nice if they played with people's expectations a little bit, because right now, it's a bit petrolly, this booking, isn't it? This triple threat tag match. You know what they're doing. You can see why. Not completely against it, but I'd love it if it was just to kind of like stop us looking at something different. So maybe that's why Martin's lost here. Is there something different and just as exciting for him on the Revolution card?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that indeed is the case. We get a little bit of a setup for a match on Dynamite next week. Jade Cargill wants her next opponent. So here's Matt Hardy, interrupter extraordinaire, alongside the Bunny. He thinks it'll be a money match, and Cargill's fine with that because she smells, looks, and sounds like money. And in fact, she's wearing money on her ear. It's an incredible look. And just in case people didn't know the backstory, she wore something quite similar, like the full bodysuit gimmick in silver. And someone on Twitter responded with a JPEG of Jim Carrey playing the Riddler in Batman Forever in a bid to take the piss out of her. Jade Cargill, in response, went, "That's an absolutely fire look. I will take that on and make it look cool." And lo and behold, she, in fact, literally looks like money. It's more preview for us. Let's just talk about the attire, because I know you love the attire.
It's just incredible. Like, you absolutely cannot take your eyes off a look as cool as that. And it's just another element that Jade Cargill is understanding how it is that you... Well, it's the Jim Ross, you know, maxim about maximizing your minutes. But she does that at a point in her career where it's probably most important to do that, because her matches will be scrutinized and people will be looking to see exactly, you know, what she gets wrong or what isn't quite right or finished about her article yet. And even like the whole thing from a few weeks ago, like, green is money. So she's even taken that criticism and just added it to this character. Yeah. It's a perfect stylistic choice. She's continues for me to be the perfect champion for this role as well, because the TBS, like the TNT title, is going to allow open challenges. So Matt Hardy bringing the Bunny on, they couldn't feel any less essential to all of this. But great, because Jade's going to absolutely smash them on Dynamite. So that's like all Rampage, whenever. Is it Wednesday's Dynamite?
Wednesday, yeah.
Like, they've...
Bunny's the real head of the table, so that should get a number. Should.
She's like the quarter-hour queen, isn't she? So yeah. It's Bunny's money.
So,
I want to see it. if only for watching this Jade Cargill just dominate yet again. So it's not, as far as like those weird interrupting impromptu builds go, it's far from the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. I still don't like interruptions, but when you're interrupting that person, you just sort of forget that there's been an interruption. You just look at a dollar bill just right in front of you.
Is that because you were slightly sickened by every time they do a little tease that Matt Hardy's going weird again? Yeah. Because we all know where that's going.
Yes, actually, that's a good point, because Matt Hardy, this is like such bollocks foreshadowing and hinting. Like, AEW love, they're the purveyors of the tease, the Easter egg. Him doing the Team Extreme hand sign in someone's face is, oh, Jeff Hardy's coming in then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't mind. It's just one of those things where, like, I know how AEW, Freudian slip, do their stories. We're going to get 4 months. Do we respect you or not? Find out in 4 months when we eventually do the friggin' match.
Do you think Tony Khan's big surprise is he's been on the phone to Lita?
Maybe.
So, when you finish with that, I think I need you for this. Yeah. I'm not sure how these are going to go down, but we're doing it whether I really want it or not.
Lita doing a moonsault on Cutler. Yes. That would be awesome.
We fixed it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We fixed Hardy in AEW already.
Lita, bit of a copy for the next podcast we're set to record after this. I put her in a match in AEW.
Yeah, she's not bad.
She used to be canny bad, and yeah. I'm actually not. On the subject of not bad at all, the third or the fourth matches, if you like, took place. The 5-minute professor challenge between Serena Deeb and Angelica Risk. It's much of the same as we've seen before, but with a purpose, because the more you do these totally one-sided sub-2-minute squashes, when someone goes 4 or 5 minutes, it'll actually resonate. But in order to get to that point, you need to do more of this. This being Serena Deeb taking total control, catapult into the bottom rope, throat looks like it's in agony. She goes for the 3 count, but she just picks her head up because she just wants to be cruel. And the cruelty manifests as a powerbomb, which sets up the Serenity Lock for the win at under 2 minutes. I love the timing of this. I love the long-term build of this. I love Serena Deeb's performance, the way she's just so cruel in her facial expressions and how she decides to just inflict more damage. It's like a bit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The 5-minute challenge, you can't even last 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm just elongating the time in comfortable time just to be a complete cock about it. Yeah, nothing blew away. It's just all groundwork for the finish, but it's all working very well for me. I wish he wasn't nobbing Marty Scurll. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Serena Deeb?
Well, I agree with that sentiment, definitely. I didn't think she'd end up being, and this is what, only the second one of these. Like, already she's shown how cognizant she is of the clock itself, and that is going to feed into something too. So it's not just about, we've talked about obviously how all of this is to be able to say somebody coming very close and losing, and then maybe Sheeta being the one to reveal herself to beat the challenge or whatever. But there's grand comeuppance coming Serena Deeb's way as a result of all of this. But already in the second week, she's looking at the situation and thinking, I've got ages, and licking her lips. So like, her using the clock as part of the story is going to be great for the week that she's first rattled or she's first panicked by somebody's attack. Somebody is going to run a bit of the clock down and then catch her with something or like put her in a hold, and you're going to see Deeb's eyes flash to the screen where there's going to be 3 minutes left and she's trapped in a leg lock or something. Oh, I've got to deal with this. That's just another added element of this. These are going to be five just simply delightful minutes every week for as long as it goes. I love this trope, and they've given it to the perfect wrestler to pull it off as well. It's it was weeks ago when you made a point of, well, sometimes they'll put a Jade Cargill match on. It'll go 60 seconds. They were like, there's your woman's match.
Yep, nice one.
This is the way to do that, but do it in a way that is actually genuinely rewarding. It doesn't feel like you're gaming the system a little bit. It feels something different.
Yeah, they were definitely gaming the system, because their whole intention the entire time was, we're going to strap up Jade Cargill, therefore we can give her as many wins as possible. We don't have to think of the permutations of how long this winning streak's going on or how long she'll be in the rankings, with the idea being, well, we're going to strap her up so we can just have the token women's match last 1 minute and just get to the men. Get back to the bloody men. This is a much different... They did it on Dynamite the other week where it was Serena Deeb's 5 minute rookie challenge in addition to another women's match. More of that, please. Otherwise, it might eventually scan as a very cynical way of getting the token women's match on television. Before we get to the main event, Excalibur, Jesus Christ, whenever there's a pay-per-view, and now that there's Rampage and Dynamite, the guy is on total motor-mouth speedrun form for trying to sell like three cards at once. He does an incredible job. I think they get criticized or it's memed. I just think he does a great job, and I can, you know, I'm not a goldfish, so I can actually remember what matches are happening when. So that was a little bit funny, and we don't have the soundboard because we're not Adam Wilborn.
Yes.
But it's time for the main event.
Okay.
It's been enough talk. Well, it looks like it's been enough talk. It's time for the main event, and that main event is between Trent Barretta and Jay White, and I absolutely love this match. The story of which is that Trent Barretta is a pretty explosive, low-key guy. Who can do a lot of damage in the ring, but Jay White, who's incredible at the counter. I love counters in professional wrestling. I feel like sometimes it can be a little bit too cute or too convoluted. The genius of Jay White, and I'm not using that word lightly, is that he's so perfectly in character with it. If you look at that horrible, weaselly little face, he can sell the fact that he's so crafty.
Yeah.
And the craft here and the defensive nous manifested with some wonderful counters. The one in the finish is going to get put over the most, but my favorite was the one that led us to the commercial break, where he just throws Trent over the top rope and onto the apron. Because so often when we watch TV wrestling, we get the rhythms of it now. It's something that you accept, but at some point, the heel is going to cut off the baby face. And when the commercial break happens, you get 2 to 3 minutes of a control sequence, and it's like, get to the point, get to the comeback. Jay White's use of the counter made that sort of TV contrivance that we just have to live with not feel like a contrivance. It felt like it used his defensive nous, his strategic instincts to just kill Trent on this apron. That was fantastic. We got some other wonderful counters. Again, you get the impression watching Jay White that he's a professional wrestler, a combat athlete who studies tape and actually watches his opponent. He's aware that Trent does a fire up when he's thrust into the barricade and comes back with a spear. So Jay White just knees him in the face in response to it. That was brilliant. Of course, there's some wonderful further counter exchanges leading up to the finish, which saw Trent attempt Storm Zero and in an absolutely exquisite counter. The sort of thing that makes the most sense when you analyze the guys' movesets respectively beforehand, but only they are capable of actually delivering it. And he reverses it into the Blade Runner for the 1-2-3. This was so great, and I'm going to get a little bit annoyed when I watch Jay White in New Japan do the stalling again, because he can do this act without any... And I understand he's not going for pops, but he can trim the fat of that act. Once he's realizing that I can't do 5 minutes, it's TV, I can instead tell my story in a more refined way. Just start doing that from now on. I didn't think when I watched Jay White mature as a New Japan headliner that he could do TV wrestling quite as phenomenally as he did it for me on Rampage. Trimmed the fat, trimmed the stalling, trimmed the cheap heat, and he still got over as this incredibly snidey little strategic heel on the compact TV platform. Trent was a great opponent. I thought this was a great TV main event. What are your thoughts on all of it?
Yeah, we said this a few weeks ago when Dynamite was going off the rails. Place some restrictions on yourself, because restrictions make for discipline.
Yes.
Discipline makes for a better show overall. And that like was summed up kind of there in your assessment of how Jay White didn't have to get to the point, because I think that undermines what he does in those New Japan matches. But he's obviously, they're far too liberal with how much he's allowed to do. And I would argue even maybe Gedo himself quite likes it, because it felt like he was working under advice when he first started doing it in New Japan. It was like, And then he does it once. And then backstage, Gator's like, you know, you can do four of them. And he's like, four? Yep. Like, make him wait, make him want it, all that sort of stuff. But in this era of 40-minute New Japan main events, it was just becoming draining as a result, and it was taking way too long for Jay White to get to the point, which, again, I think that's why Jay White is a pretty good G1 wrestler, because the idea is that all of them are against the clock, and I know 30 minutes isn't 10 on TV, but it's the same principle applies. And I welcome more of that within AEW's extremely tight time constraints. I'm like you. I love Jay White, whilst being very aware and understanding of people's criticisms of him.
That's a good way of putting it.
But because it took me a while to get him, and then when I did, I just kind of like fell head over heels for him, and it was because of performances like this. Yeah, Trent cast as a perfect... Trent is not going to be the John Moxley that I think people thought he was going to be, but that doesn't mean he can't have these really explosive matches, the type of which we've seen in small bursts from him from time to time. We talked about 10 earlier on, another kind of perfect guy to beat that doesn't particularly lose any credibility, but can feel like he's competitive the whole way through. So the events of No Surrender... Spoilers for anybody that's not caught up with the Impact pay-per-view. I can't pretend to watch the whole thing. It's just there was a social media buzz for it, and there rarely is for Impact. For Jay White turning on Tama Tonga, theoretically kicking the Gorillas of Destiny out of Bullet Club. This is a not insignificant development in terms of what Jay White does in AEW, because the Young Bucks were quick on the bio to be like, I think they did the cry laugh emoji and said, we never liked G.O.D. anyway, or something like that. Tama Tonga is an original, is he not?
Yeah.
So this is not big news within Bullet Club. And if... this is more Forbidden Door stuff than probably Tony Khan realised when he made that panicked Saturday call. I need an actual Forbidden Door guy here, because we're back sprawling over three promotions, and Jay White is a figure that cannot be trusted. And Adam Cole was there with a big smile when he arrived. The Young Bucks were less convinced. And big picture stuff that we love as relates to Kenny Omega and going back all those years, I don't think that's not going to impact things in AEW. And I haven't thought that about the Impact stuff for a while. I've not needed to watch Impact and think, oh, how's that going to play out on television? Yeah. I feel like Jay White doing that is keeping his character heated, even if, I know we've got a setup that we'll talk about here with Orange Cassidy, but I think that is probably going to inform more of what happens with the likes of the Young Bucks and Adam Cole than anything he's going to do in AEW, at least in the short term.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when Jay White was introduced on screen and Young Bucks expressed their misgivings over what Adam Cole might be doing, he said, like, when you Bullet Club for life.
Mm.
It's like, well, Tama Tonga's not.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if, like, the Young Bucks question that, or there's a story with, it's kind of a story with the Young Bucks, Anderson and Gallows, and Gorillas of Destiny, where they've alluded on being the elite and stuff, that they think Tama Tonga is just a bit of a knob. It's a bit of, like, a puff chest knob who kind of would be nothing without the Bullet Club.
Right.
So they can style this... Mm. presumed plot hole, and I'm interested to see how it actually plays out. But in the post-match, Orange Cassidy and Jay White have like sort of a confrontation, which would indicate that they're having a match. And now that I've realised, so hang on, we might at some point, whether it's Revolution or a Dynamite main event, we might be getting Jay White versus Orange Cassidy. Ignore everything I said 5 minutes ago. I'm a hack. I'm a hypocrite. Jay White can absolutely do a stalling then.
Yeah.
Like, what if Jay White's the guy to wind up Orange Cassidy? Mm. What if they wind each other up in parallel? What if all of the stalling and slowly sort of crawling out of the ring when Jay White does it, and then, because usually the whole idea is people get pissed off, or he's stalling, he's taking the piss. What if Orange Cassidy then just did it, and then Jay White's the one to get rattled?
Yeah.
Just be Jay White.
It has loads of potential, and I know I'm always the low guy on Orange Cassidy, because often I feel like his character... results in better fantasy booking than some of the matches end up being. It's almost, he encourages so much creativity, that character, that often then it doesn't manifest on the night.
Yeah.
But over is over and stars are stars. And as soon as the two came face to face, I was just thinking, you son of a bitch, I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, you've got me again, AEW, with these random pairings, these living match graphics that I didn't realize I wanted until I was shown it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it on Revolution. I understand people's excitement of making a big list of matches and being like, wow, this looks unbelievable. Can we not learn some goddamn lessons?
Yeah, yeah.
Like try and keep it to three, maybe three and a half. Ten matches is going to be too long. Something is going to suffer as a result. And of all things, I actually think White Cassidy could be that match. Like, something always loses for those bigger cards.
I think they would have the crowd in 3 minutes. If they do the bit where Jay White does the stalling and Orange Cassidy's like, this is exactly my speed. And just the subversion of Jay White being rattled. Like, when we talk about Tony Khan being the Booker of the Year, it's not just for these like sprawling sagas with your MJFs and your Punks and your Pages versus your Omegas. Just, he's realised,
people are taking the Forbidden Door thing very literally, as they should. It's the Forbidden Door, not just let's sign a free agent. And he's thought, right, okay, let's get Jay White in because it technically counts as Forbidden Door. Yes, there's a best friends versus super click elite dynamic that he can easily slot into being part of the Bullet Club. But just the idea of Jay White versus Orange Cassidy on the very basis of that fantasy booking spot I've just laid out is like, that's actually quite genius, that.
It's answered a criticism as well, because I saw a, I wish I could remember the person that tweeted this, I apologise, but I saw a tweet regarding the Cody matches that never happened, and the guy who was tweeting ran out of characters. Like, I don't mean ran out of wrestlers, I mean ran out of characters in the tweet, because there was that many names, he just kept going and going and going and going, and there wasn't enough space to fill out all the people that Cody could have faced, because he does sort of dawdle sometimes, or do the Dynamite star versus jobber pairing. This is a perfect example. Jay White comes in, and theoretically his second or third match is going to be one of the ones that you would have seen in a side-by-side in an old, like, New Japan versus AEW Forbidden Door graphic Twitter thread. Like, this is what people want when they're asking for... You got loads of stars now. Start putting them against each other rather than keeping them in, like, in little separate undefeated streaks all the time. So I was pleased to see this, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just on that Cody thing, I understand that, yes, they left so much money on the table, and maybe it does hint towards the fact that AEW could sort of not completely change, but just get on with it a little bit with its booking. But Cody put the right people over, and he picked his spots, and he beat people to then get the heat back to then put over the other people. So I do think he put over in MJF, Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara more productive long-term results with genuine consequences rather than just having a dream match with Hangman Page. But then what's going to happen is that 3 weeks after Revolution, when I see a certain Dynamite card, I'm going to think, get to the goddamn point.
Yeah.
Because you're taking the absolute piss. But that was the Rampage review. Yet another really easy, hot 7.5 out of 10. Is that enough? Is that what you envisaged when Rampage is? Is it a compromise that you're willing to accept? Because even though they don't sort of get you on tenterhooks ahead of the shows, when they're finished, you think, well, that was better than most TV shows.
That was an hour.
This session. So let us know your thoughts on Rampage as a whole as it settles into this decidedly B-flavoured status, but more often than not B+, at least in terms of quality. I still want Danielson Kingston matches of that caliber, but you can't run a
tournament. Well, they're both B+ players, so that's fine.
Jesus Christ. On that note, we will end this podcast. You can follow us all at WhatCultureWWE on Twitter to let us know those thoughts. Whilst you're there, you can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at M Sidgwick. Once again, you can follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Do not forget to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcast from, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever. And until then, we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.